members will remember that we said we would want to have a briefing on this, and now we will address that one. When the department has been released, we will be adopting our big RRR. So that is the arrangement today. Given that explanation, I'm really greeting our guests. If there are any today, you are welcome to observe the proceedings. But unfortunately, we are not generous. You won't participate. You can only observe. Okay, now the ball is in yours. We would want to know who is leading the department. And in terms of apologies, can we start with that part arrangement before the department gives us who is leading them? And after that, they will be allowed to address the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Good morning, honorable members and departmental officials in presence. I have a couple of apologies. One is from the Deputy Minister, who won't be with us today. She attended the South African Older Persons Forum in Limpopo. Another one is from Honorable Fana Merve. She is attending the Chief Whip Forum. And another one is from, I believe that Honorable Makgotsi is on sick leave until the 20th of November. So those, and we have our standing apology of Honorable Tikwak. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And you are welcome, Honorable Member. You will not late with that starting. I also forget to thank our content advisor for her sterling work in standing for the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee when she was not well. And we also wish well Honorable Mkhosi. We know that she's under doctor's care, so we wish her a speedy recovery. We are also patiently awaiting for our member, Honorable Tikok. So, thank you very much, Yuri. Your work has been sterling up until we have our report that will be adopted today. Thank you very much for working for us. So we can now start. Okay, Honorable Member. Okay. She's been assisted. Thank you. Okay, we can start next. Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say that before we start, Chair, the acting DG is not in today because she is chairing the cluster meeting, so that's an apology for her. We also, Chair, have additional members that are assisting me. My name is Mzolisi Toni, Deputy Director General responsible for rights of persons with disabilities. I have also with me, okay, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Benny Padime. I'm responsible for advocacy and mainstreaming, but my specialty is in policy and legislation, so I'll be assisting Dr. Tony with the presentation. Thank you, Chen. If you hear things that are talking behind Benny, you must know that those are the assistive devices that he is using. Yeah. Thanks, Honourable Member. I am leading the team, and my name is Mzolisi Toni.
My name is Zumga Oliphant, and I'm the acting DDG, Strategy and Organizational Transformation.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Member.
I'm sorry, I'm using the wrong mic. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to Honourable Members and colleagues. My name is Thabane Buthelezi from the Department of Social Development, responsible for monitoring and evaluation of our programs and policies.
Good morning. My name is Otamai Moketsi. I'm the personal assistant to Mr. Penny Paddy.
The minister is still on the way. She will join us soon. So we can proceed with the presentation. But I hope the acting DG is still the minister and not
sorry. Sorry, David. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must say that we are happy and appreciate the interest of the Portfolio Committee in making sure that you give us the platform to come and raise the importance of this policy and also emphasize our intention to make sure that the Portfolio Committee will embrace the policy and ensure that this policy is also driven in other policy Portfolio Committee meetings. This is a groundbreaking work, Chairperson, because at the development of the policy, we made sure that there are international colleagues that would interrogate and critique the policy development, and we also had a panel of experts that made sure that they also from South Africa, they also look at the policy and see whether every ground has been covered. After that, Chair, we then presented the policy to Cabinet in December last year, and Cabinet approved the policy, and we made sure that in all of these issues, we used our experience, because when we had the INDS, which is Integrated National Disability Strategy, which was approved in 1997, we realized that people don't necessarily know how to implement the policy. So this time around, we developed the implementation matrix, which we also shared with in terms of the documentation that we're sharing with the Portfolio Committee, so that it's clear for each department in terms of what is it that is expected of them. And we also made sure that as we make this presentation, we are clear in each slide in terms of what we think would be the role of the Portfolio Committee. And we take the Portfolio Committee as a committee on the rights of persons with disability at the UN level, because they are also doing an oversight in terms of how each country is performing in terms of disability. We then decided to share, Chair, with the Portfolio Committee the guidelines in terms of each article, in terms of the articles. On each article, there are series of questions that the Portfolio Committee would be able to raise so that we are able to get facts and figures with regards to how each department is progressing with regards to mainstreaming disability. So those are some of the work that we have done, Chair, with regards to this policy. We will then move, Chair, to where we talk about what the policy entails. The main part of the policy speaks to the nine pillars. And we want to say also this work is aligned to the National Development Plan, Chair, and it's the forerunner of full domestication of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We also strive to accelerate embedding of disability mainstreaming in governance and administrative systems. We also want to promote strengthening of accountability by duty bearers. Duty bearers are people like myself, as well as recourse mechanism for rights holders. Rights holders are disabled people themselves. We want to make sure that there's advocates that all persons with disabilities and their families benefit from this policy. As I said earlier, Chair, this is about updates to South African 1997 White Paper on the Integrated National Disability Strategy, and it integrates obligations of the UN Convention. So that's why in we have allocated nine pillars that are directly linked to the articles that are shown in the UN Convention. We also make sure that endorses the mainstreaming trajectory for realizing the rights of persons with disabilities and providing clarity and guides the development of standards operating procedures for mainstreaming of disability. Beni will also emphasize in terms of the tools that we and the models that we're using to make sure that this is realized. Chair, as I said, that we are talking to the nine strategic pillars of the policy, and the first pillar is about removing barriers to access and participation. The emphasis here, Chair, is about making sure that we're changing attitudes and behavior in terms of how we perceive persons with disabilities. We have an attitude that if a disabled woman is pregnant, then we think that that's not her place to be pregnant. She has no right to get pregnant. Access to built environment, and this is also very important, Chair, that it's not about also looking that there are ramps, but that there are things that if I'm blind, I'm able to access the building easily. And also, if the building is on fire, deaf persons are able to vacate the building with ease. We're also talking about access to information and communication. One of the things that are very important in terms of removing barriers and access to participation, we're talking also about universal design and access. This is what we're supposed to do. Also, we're talking about reasonable accommodation and measures. People like Mr. Padime will be able to work freely with less support from their personal attendants, because the gadgets that they are using are such that if the document is a PDF, the tools that he would be using would be able to get the information so that he's able to read it. The second pillar, Chair, is on protecting the rights of persons and risk of compounded marginalization. Here, Chair, we're talking about the right to life, and this is about the severity of disability. We're talking about equal recognition before the law, and we had one case at some point. One woman was raped in Soweto, and the police could not take the statement because they felt that the person has got a mental disability, so the information would therefore not be accurate. We have since made sure that people in the justice cluster are properly trained so that they are able to take the statement. And also issues around access to justice, freedom from torture or cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment, exploitation, violence and abuse. These are some of the things that we've seen lately in terms of how people with psychosocial disabilities have been treated. And we've seen it on the papers that about 37 people died in that situation. So we need, as South Africa, make sure that there's a policy that guides us in terms of how disabled people need to be treated. The third pillar, Chair, speaks to supporting sustainable integrated community life, which has to do with building social cohesion communities and neighborhoods, building and supporting families, accessible human settlements, neighborhoods, access to community-based services, supporting independent living and protection during situation of risk and disaster. This is also one element that the UN is advocating, because we have seen a lot of disasters in the world, and that disabled people become victims during this time. The fourth one is talking to promoting and supporting empowerment of persons with disabilities. This is about making sure that at an early age, disabled children are able to enter and access and participate in early childhood development programs, lifelong education and training, social integration support, access to health care and lifestyle support, supported decision making, especially for those that we think cannot participate in meetings and cannot make decisions, that we provide the necessary support so that those people are able to make those decisions. Strengthening recourse mechanism, and you would see in the slide, Chair, in red, I indicated in terms of which portfolio committees would be appropriate in driving that particular pillar. We're also talking about issues of access, diversity, and quality, which has to do with enrollment in early childhood development programs, grade L enrollment, school enrollment versus dropouts, versus exclusion, availability, and making sure that we drive the backlogs of assistive devices, especially pushing the Department of Health to make sure that they take full responsibility in this case. Number of districts without rehabilitation professionals, this is one thing that is quite key, Chair, that we have less people that are trained in making sure that they provide that professional support to persons with disabilities. Peer and parent empowerment programs, empowerment and support decision-making for those with severe communication, behavioral, intellectual disabilities. That's an emphasis, Chair. We also moving to pillar number five, which is talking to reducing economic vulnerability and releasing human capital. We want to make sure that in this case, disabled people are able, whether they are severely disabled or not, but they are enabled or to participate at levels that are in this case becoming a member of parliament or a CEO of a company. And we feel that if the necessary support is given to a person, there's no stopping that the person cannot reach that. With regards to pillar number six, Chair, this is quite critical, and this is what UN is really advocating, that unless we ensure that organizations of disabled people are strengthened or empowered or supported to make sure that they are able in return to make sure that their members are able to participate through self-representation. In South Africa, we've done that, Chair, through structures like Parliament, Chapter 9 structures. We also are ensuring that the diversity and capacity of DPOs and self-advocacy programs are strengthened. There's also public participation and consultation. I know that at some point Parliament would call on organizations of disabled people to come and present their case. We also talk about self-representation in public life. Then we go to pillar number 7, which has to do with building a disability equitable state machinery. We want to make sure that in the stages of planning, there's disability equitable planning, there's proper budgeting that is effected at the point where we formulating our programs and associating with the relevant budget, and there's also an appropriate service delivery to disabled persons. We also want to make sure that public procurement and regulations are such that they accommodate the participation of persons with disability. Capacity building and training, these are some of the things that we are currently doing. Mr. Padime is going in the provinces, capacitating civil servants in terms of how they are expected to implement the policy, strengthening accountability. This is about making sure that with regards to us reporting to both Cabinet and Parliament, provinces are able to give us accurate reports with aggregated data so that we're able to give appropriate information and reporting. Pillar number 8, Chair, speaks to promoting internal cooperation. As I said, that in SADC and in AU and at UN, we're working collaboratively. We have examples of best practice in terms of our policy processes, and our colleagues at an international level are seeking our support and guidance in terms of how we are doing in South Africa, and we have done that in recent months. Chair, some of the information are around making sure that we have clarified what constitutes the coordination coordinating mechanism, and we are saying that at a national level we have got a national coordinating mechanism which will be supported by national public entities, SALGA, Parliament, business, labor and research structures. We also talking about the national participation of national government departments in that mechanism, traditional leadership institutions, institutions that are promoting democracy in South Africa. And these are some of the things that we're saying that at that level we'd be able, therefore, to make sure that there's proper coordination. Chair, if we speak to pillar number 9, which is talking to monitoring and evaluation, in the department we have this unit that is ensuring that the monitoring and evaluation is properly coordinated. We also have a document that we're building, which is Disability Inequality Index, and we're busy now trying to make sure that provinces are properly trained. We also are expecting that by March next year we'll be able to develop the first disability status in South Africa, which we will make sure that it's presented to both Cabinet and Parliament, and that from there we will be able to develop our periodic international treaty reporting, on impact on the lives of persons with disabilities. Chair, the rest, before I allow Mr. Padime to add additional information, we have added things that we think we are currently doing in relation to implementation of the white paper by the department. So I will just quickly ask Mr. Padime to just conclude on that, and then we are done, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. What we are doing currently with regard to the status of the white paper, I'll go through them very quickly. The first thing is we've got roadshows that we're implementing in the provinces, both at the Executive Council level, led by the Deputy Minister, and also at the official level where I'm leading the process, in training officials and people from the sector to understand the policy. So that's an ongoing process. We've just finished, we've done four provinces, but we've had to go back to KwaZulu-Natal because of a project that I'll explain just quickly what we were doing with the children in the ECD centers in KZN. And we will be moving into the Free State on the 15th of November and so forth. So that process continues. The second part is that we are now moving very, very quickly, Chair, into the domestication of the policy. The difficulty is that when the policy is sitting somewhere on a shelf, an official says to us, no, everybody, this policy of yours is an unfunded mandate. And it sits there, it gathers dust, and then after 5 years, it's reviewed. So what we're doing now is to say, from now on, every department must start drafting either new laws or regulations, and we're moving towards the part where we're dealing currently with the regulations of the Equality Act, the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. And that movement is very, very, very tight because we're working towards looking at Section 28 of the Act itself, which talks about special measures on disability. And we are saying at the ultimate end, you are going to need a situation where we might reach a point where we need a cross-cutting legislation on disability. But we are starting with three processes so that we see which one works much better, including making new laws where necessary, so that this policy can have teeth now. The other important thing is that there is also a process of the non-financial data training, which is taking place in the provinces, and it's part of the white paper process. The pilot that is running in KwaZulu-Natal is a pilot for ECD centers. Most of our parents, Chair, start their own centers, daycare centers. They've got caregivers, but our caregivers are not really trained to understand the process. So what we are doing in KZN currently is to train those people, also get social workers on board. And I must say that I'm glad that social workers are actually responding very positively towards the policy. Because the first thing they say to me is they did not understand what they should do to start with, you know, because they see us coming with projects and they don't understand what's going on. So we have to train them. If we say the pilot is done on the white paper, it means that we must train those social workers. So it's working very well. The other important part of the white paper here, Chair, is that we are now moving towards the domestication process in terms of saying what are those regulations that need to be done almost immediately. I'll give you a simple example, Chair. In the Department of Social Development, We have started with the process of the Social Assistance Act. But we're looking at social assistance separately as part of the package of social protection. You see, so that includes all your COIDA, your UIF, your road accident fund, all of those. We're looking at it as a package. So, one of the things we're doing is to make sure that that package includes social security or social protection as a package, and a person is able to qualify for certain aspects of those packages that we are presenting. The other aspect is we are developing two huge frameworks which we have to come and present here at the Portfolio Committee before the end of March, I suppose, in that is. Firstly, it's the reasonable accommodation tool, and the second one is the National Strategic Framework on Accessibility and Universal Design. Now, those of the honorable members who have been working with us for quite a lot of time will say, but the public service has got a reasonable accommodation tool. You see, it's not, reasonable accommodation does not mean only for the workplace. It means all aspects of life of a person with a disability must be covered. So reasonable accommodation is independent related, it's employment related, and it's also developmental related. So it's in three absolute phases. That means it covers a person's life. When you look at universal design, for instance, in the context of the framework that we are going to present before the end of March, is that universal design means everything. For instance, I'll give you a simple example, honorable members, which will make you laugh. I always say to people, when you design a station, a radio sort of, let's say, not a radio station, let's say a train station. The radio station example I always give also is one of the things. When you design a train station, you don't design it only for persons with disabilities. You design it for persons, the older persons. You design it for children. You design it for women with young babies, with prams. You design it for women who are pregnant, who need assistance to walk. And you also design it for drunk people. Because at night, when they come from wherever they come from, when they get to the station, they'll fall if the stairs are too steep. And they might actually fall into the train or in front of the train. So if you design it properly, they are just able to go through the sections of the station and go straight into the train. So the universal design, so it's for everybody. And every technology that's designed is for everybody. The cell phones today have got voices and things like that. But it's important that we understand it from that point of view. But it does not go alone. It goes with universal access, which means the availability of assistive devices must be universalized. You see, there must be universalization. There must be the assistive devices that gives technology to people with disabilities and everybody else. And when I talk about the radio station example, I always say, when you design a radio station, you must design it thinking about a cell phone so that everybody else is able to have access to this. So that if a person with a disability needs to read the message or access a podcast, they must do it just through a cell phone. And I'm glad that we've gone so far. And now, there have been some few changes to legislation, Chairperson. And I think, Chairperson, really please don't shout at us. We have given ourselves time as a department to start sitting on different ministerial committees of different departments. However, this process is normally done through the permission of the Directors General of these departments, but also is gathered by relevant ministers. We have just finished the policy on higher education and training, and NSFAS has now asked for a funding model which we have given to them, so that when you do the feast must fall stories, these are the models, funding models that you must look at in terms of disability, just as an example. We are sitting on the Copyright Law Act. So the Act is now completed. It has gone through the normal processes, and it now compels us as a state to sign the Marrakesh Treaty, which we have struggled to sign for the last 5 years. So I'm just giving those examples. We are currently sitting on the Basic Education Ministerial Committee, which looks at all basic education-related aspects. The South African Schools Act, for instance, Section 12 and 13, Section 42, in terms of homeschooling, all of those committees are extremely important because we are assisting the country to progress in terms of disability and to look at the legal aspects of disability when it comes to all of this. So all of this work that we're doing is an alignment to the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. But we are not taking away responsibilities of any department. For instance, I mean, we're sitting in the Public Works Ministerial Advisory Committee. In that, we are actually regulating the national building standards. Uh-huh. And we are also promulgating regulations in the same committee. So all of that work is extremely important, and it's the work that we would have to compile in a sort of a folder so that we can give a report of this kind of committees to the portfolio committee here to say, this is where we are. Same thing applies to telecommunications and postal services. We are sitting in the big working group, the disability chamber of the minister's committee, to advise on ICTs on disability. And new things have come up. We've reviewed the tax laws with regard to excise and customs duties for those types of devices. This is where I will end, Chair, and we will then be prepared to take questions.
Then, Chair, in conclusion, Chair, there was one thing that we forgot to mention, that you would recall that earlier we spoke about the 2%. Now, the National Development Plan aims to eliminate poverty and reduce inequality by 2030. Now, equality of outcomes for persons with disabilities must be prioritized. And therefore, Stats SA Disability Monograph of Census 2011 showed a national disability prevalence of 7.5%. In light of this growing population, the target for inclusion was set at 7% and by 2020. And we think that it will be 10% by 2030. So those are some of the things that we need to navigate through and massage the departments in terms of taking those seriously. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I think I should applaud the department for having been able. We are very welcome, Honourable Dudley. We knew you were in other meetings, not worry. You will participate, but you really arrived when we were still starting to listen to the presentation. So I hope you have benefited. Thank you so much. But even before I open the floor for questions and clarity, I think I do appreciate the amount of work that we have done, but also to say in our work here in Parliament, we have also understood that the current serving parliamentarians who are living with disabilities, also while they are here to represent their communities and their political parties, they strongly feel and regard themselves as also representing the category of their stage, which I will ask the honorable members of the portfolio committee that, because it is now very busy in every committee, we must have time to invite them and specifically sit with them as these lawmakers in this portfolio committee, and then explain what we heard from you or invite you to come. I remember their input in various committees was really, really about others outside as being disabled, as well as themselves in this institution, their access to many things that they would want. I also would want to appreciate that more has been done, honorable members, because at least there was a special arrangement for the offices and how they can get some easiness on their own in their offices. And that the government, this parliament has gone out to ensure that those who are supposed to be using wheelchairs, we need to say these things when they are done. They are having assistance with those wheelchairs, and also that those who need interpretation, such people have been enabled and licensed to be in the house and assist them with the interpretation wherever there's going to be a meeting. And South Africa prides itself because there are also these technologies that assist them to do everything. So when we listened, when I was not a member of parliament, to one parliamentarian from this parliament, when she was explaining how she can use a cell phone, everything that she said she could use and going to other countries. So this one is another breakthrough, because these people, this category of our society, has, honorable members, been marginalized very, very seriously. And they have been made to feel less human. And therefore, even parenting, they would have to lock them inside and never to want to accept the disability that they have. And that we are at this stage. I'm very, very proud of all those who have approved such pieces of policies that have enabled us to go through. But what I really recommend from the chair, while not taking the opportunity for members to participate and to push their views forward, I think there's a lot that requires to be done on the part of training parents who happen to give birth to a child that has disability. She feels very scared. She has guilty feelings that maybe it's a curse or whatever, and therefore even being able to be empathetic rather than sympathetic, they sometimes overprotect, and therefore those parts that need to be well developed are sometimes ignored, because you might want to feed your child, but if she's hungry, she can be able to try, and that crying leads to independency of being able to feed yourself. And also this matter of institutions that are able to do that, where I can go and be with fellow parents and also attend training, knowing that it is not a case, it is just that what has happened. Also, this issue of mainstreaming, this was taken as a resolution, honorable members, sometime in Mafeking by the ANC, that there must be mainstreaming. But today, there's more demand in various provinces for more centers for education for people with disabilities. But maybe the members will correct me. I was believing it meant that current schools, current places of learning would be revamped to allow these people to come in. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. We are exactly where you would want to go to, acting a DG. I was saying the current situation, Honorable Minister, there's a hell of a demand to increase the education centers for people with disabilities, despite the fact that my understanding, I will be corrected by the House, there was a clear decision that we cannot continue to be disintegrated. We better revamp existing schools to have an environment that allows all of us to be under one class. But it continues to say, no, we need a special school. They are referred to as special schools. But it would be better if there's a special classroom or special ward in an institution that has got under learners, so that this, we grow understanding the strengths and weaknesses of each other. And I think when the input is being made in response, that would be an emphasis, because most people have not understood this mainstreaming, that we want to be together, we want to grow up integrated, we want to be elderly in an old age together, without being saying this one was specialized for so and so. And this early intervention that the doctors articulated, that as soon as you are born with any disability, it must be treated to an extent that it doesn't exist anymore. You are able to live a free life. Because this issue now that someone must have access to a particular grant and also to this school, as if it was permanent that my arm must not be stretching like other arms. At least every effort from early age must be done to correct that where there's a possibility. And I'm happy now business people have got cars that can be driven by people with disabilities. So equality with them is really something that the country is looking forward to. And then the issue of other children to be trained to understand that disability can occur to me tomorrow. With my two legs, I can wake up being on a wheelchair. And therefore, it must be a matter that is life, is part of our life, understanding that no one is privileged not to have. So by so saying, I was saying you have done very well with this policy, but we need, as members of parliament, to extend our access, honorable members, to other portfolio committee members, especially the social development portfolio committees in provinces, so that we have the same understanding. We understand that the deputy minister has been with all the executives in the provinces, and I do believe that we need to actually be able to maybe have a workshop with all portfolio committee members on social development from all provinces, so that we can think from one team, because this situation is very the same. We must share the common ground, and also that we also want to reach as many people, lobbying that this particular white paper, where possible, minister, what can be implemented, must be implemented. I know that someone will argue that this must be a funded mandate, but I think there are ordinary matters. They are already getting their grant. All we need to do is to ensure that they get all those who qualify must. And the issue that they have access to education, building, to enforce that buildings are user-friendly, to to all types of disabilities. I don't think we need additional budget for that. These are daily matters which are otherwise human rights issues that will need to be addressed. While we are not saying you need not get the budget for this white paper implementation, we will advocate for that, but we also believe that the minister will be able to lead us in a debate in the House so that we can get some approval, so that no one queries that it has to be as fast as possible to implement it. People have waited for a long time for their right to be documented, to have a document that talks to it. Although I'm not arguing that they were neglected, I'm arguing that, yes, every other thing has been done, but we now want enforcement and enabling legislation, as you have indicated that you are already working for a bill to put forward. With those, having welcomed the delegation of the minister, the acting DG and the minister, and then I will allow members to make their input. For me, I won't be worried whether it's an addition, it's a question for clarity, whatever you think your participation is going to be. Thank you very much. Honorable Umamu Abrams, Umamu Masango, Umamu Wilson, Umamu Ho, Umamu Jaduma Vigo, I'm sorry. Nawetiti mamusoti nawetiti webegati hemiti so ndiyabona ke akanohlupheka ukuthi azimabilo xa ndisithi umama. Can we then proceed?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and officials, thank you very much. Yes. I'm very proud because I've been a part of people fighting for people with a disability for rights, and so I'm very happy today and proud of the ruling party that has initiated this. And for instance, we've got ministers, we've got deputy ministers, we've got MPs, MPLs, councillors right down. And when you look across it, I'd actually like to encourage all other political parties also to do the same, because it starts with us. So in that regard, I'm very proud of what is happening, Honourable Minister. Being disabled is not easy, because you need to be rich. As you work with people in the community, you discover that whatever aid you need to buy it if you're not wealthy. And to acquire that is very impossible. So part of that is covered within this white paper. And I'm again looking forward to, I hope, that I'll be still around or wherever in 2029 when the complete funding and all this will take place. On page 9, pillar 1, what tools are being used to monitor and evaluate the implementation and how will it be maintained? For instance, buses, I've been part of the Ria Vaya bus system with people with a disability. And you find that on the launch of all these buses and trains, the rents work and everything work, whatever aid is in on these facilities. And a couple of months later, when something goes wrong, it doesn't work. And for years, sometimes you find people with disabilities struggle to get onto these rents because it's not working. And it's very dangerous. I always tell people, don't get on, because if something happens with a person with a disability, then they will sue you if they pick them up, because you're not allowed to pick them up. So the access to all these must be monitored. It is there, but sometimes it's not working. Also, while the workshops have gone through the documents, seeing that all this has taken place, but to the right, to the rural areas, the local people, you know, people that sometimes, how do we get them out of their houses? It's not easy. You find when you work in a community that you've got to physically visit these people to actually get them out of their houses and let them know that they are part of the mainstream to work with us. In pillar one, yes, removing the barriers of access and participation, I've spoken about that. And page 11, building and supporting families, I think the chairperson also mentioned that it's important because families don't understand when there's something wrong, they think that they must hire the person with a disability instead of assisting. There's lots of rare things regarding the grant for assistance for people with a disability, the person that needs to assist the person at home. Many times you find that the person is completely quadruplegic, can't help himself. but when it comes to the grant, there's certain things that says no, you don't qualify. What is the qualifying criteria around that? Because myself, I've been trying to assist people and you find that they just don't qualify. Independent living is important. How can we assist them to be part of the qualifying people when houses are being built so that the houses are correct for them, and how do they qualify? There's people in the community, I think, throughout South Africa that are waiting lists since 1996, but they just don't qualify, and they are disabled, completely disabled. Education. One of my first people in my community has asked me to ask this question. he received a notice because he's following, he wants to find a job, and then the qualifying criteria on percentage, 80% is 35 years old. So how do we remove that age? Because when you're disabled, there's no color, creed, race, nothing. When you're disabled, it affects you in some. And he's always complaining, saying, I'm 42 and I don't qualify. Wherever I go, I don't qualify. He's got degrees, he's got everything, but he's saying he's not disabled, he's just differently abled. But he's qualified, he can challenge anybody in Parliament, he says, when he tells me. So please, 35 years old shouldn't be there, there shouldn't be an age yet in there. Rehabilitation also important. Unfortunately, the rehabilitation stops once you release from the hospital or institution. It should be easily accessible, and there shouldn't be a waiting list for rehabilitation, because the rehabilitation is part of the important part of getting better and sometimes being completely ill in the process, depending what your disability is. Pillar 5, reducing the economic vulnerability, releasing the human capital. I've explained that the possibility in Parliament itself, as much as we've got people with AIDS, and today too, what the department has got a PA. Maybe the department is paying the PA, but in our case, I think many people, the employee don't pay them, so you've got to walk. But somebody walking around with you all day and not being paid, I think that should be part of the if you have a personal aid, then the person should also be paid, and maybe have a job for that person too, so that you don't sit around all day and get frustrated. On the interviewing process, also people find that when they go for interviews, the first thing is they cannot get there, because when you are depending on your disability, we don't realize that people with disability, it's not like we just get up and we get into the bathroom. They need assistance. So you've got to get to a job 8 o'clock in the morning, it's impossible, because you need all this assistance. And then also transport and all that, and if you don't have that, then automatically you don't qualify, because the employees see you as you won't be able to get to the job on time. That needs to be folded in and saying it's a must. When you employ a person with a disability, you need to assist them in all regards. Yes, and I just wanted to, in your presentation, you said equality for all. It should be like that. It shouldn't just be for the rich people that qualify and get all these opportunities. It should be for each and every person. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry. I also just would like to thank the department for the presentation, and also to appreciate the part that speaks to the advocacy about disability, because it was very encouraging. In fact, recently, I don't know if this is part of this work that has been presented here today. But when one saw a lady who was speaking on television, she was communicated so clearly to the private sector how the rights of the people with disabilities are not observed by the private sector, and I just thought to myself, you know, when one was working in the NGO sector with people, especially children with disabilities, it was very saddening to hear that, you know, children who are disabled at birth grow up with a disability when it could be caught while they're still young and they can be rehabilitated and then grow up to be adults that are less living with less disabilities than when they were born. And this lady was talking to the private sector to say that they mustn't be opportunistic because their tools, I don't know if I'm going to say this like she said it, but she said it so well to say the tools at the shops are enabling people with disabilities to come in and buy and pay, but the entry into the shops, they have to struggle to get into the shop, but to the tills where their money must be used, it's very easy to get there. And for me, that was a very telling, if you like, statement to all of us who need to work with people with disabilities. So I think also I want to link that to this advocacy and the attitudes and behavior that were mentioned in the presentation, where one has been to rural areas where people are saying that they have to go and literally go into the families and look for children that have disabilities because they are being hidden, because it is regarded as a bad omen, or the ancestors don't like you, or you've just done a whole lot of wrong things, which we all know are happening in our communities. But in the flip side of that coin is that those children then are not given access to the assistance that they should get to actually grow up as full human beings and adults and are able to access to get into the economy and things like that. But the question that I would like to ask for clarity is with regard to the NGOs that work with people with disabilities. In the tracking and referral system, would they be in the DSD column where you have outlined the tracking and referral system? And also to say, because they do a lot of work in the disability sector, and some of them even do, I'm reminded of a NGO in Limpopo that takes children out of special schools, what we call special schools, into mainstream schools, and then demand that the schools or the education system actually build the schools in such a way that those children can also be accommodated. And so I would like to know if where the NGO sector is in the referral and tracking system. And then about the adoption of children with disabilities. There is a notion out there that children with disabilities are less likely to be adopted than those who are able-bodied. And so I would like to know how this is not about the white paper, but I'm just wanting to know that question whilst we are talking about the rights of people with disabilities. And the last one, Chair, would be a question that I was asked when I went to one of the NGOs, where they were saying to me that a person who does not live with a disability, but as they grow older, they lose their sight because of diabetes or of any other illness, and then when they go to apply for grants on that basis, and they are not at the age of qualifying for a old age grant, but they are living with a disability. They say that when they go to the doctors, the SASSA doctors, they don't even examine them. They just say, no, you don't qualify. So I just would like to know how that works. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think predominantly I'm covered by my colleagues who've asked questions and commented ahead of me. Just a couple of things I would like to comment on, and I'm in slight disagreement with you, Chair, because I actually think more funding is required. I think it's wonderful, and thank you for your presentation, and we're always so encouraged when we see that, that people with disabilities are getting some degree of priority because of how it's in this country. And it's encouraging to know that so much is being done for children to integrate them into the mainstream from word go. What concerns me, though, is there's a lot of people, and I see this particularly in rural areas of Limpopo, where I'm finding elderly adults severely impaired, severely challenged, living in homes and not even RDP homes, and the departments have been wonderful. They've given them wheelchairs. Now, let me tell you, in Ward 24 in Zanine, you cannot go anywhere in a wheelchair. You can't even go there in a car. Okay. So, and not one of them have got a toilet in the house. The toilet is 100, 200 meters away on the property. They are unable to access toilets, or despite the fact, in other words, what I'm trying to say is the wheelchair wasn't the answer. Okay. I went to a house the other day and they tied long lengths of hose pipe from a house about 100 meters to where the outside latrine toilet was through the trees, so the blind lady in the house could hold onto the hose pipe and find her way to the toilet. You know, those kind of things I find quite disturbing. And in all of these instances, and I could show you many, they have no access to water, they have no access to toilets, no access to sanitation where they live. You know, it's very difficult for them to get there. And in one instance, one elderly lady, her son is her only child, is unable to work. He is unable to work because he's got to take care of his mother. He's got to bath her. He's got to carry her to the toilet. He's got to feed her and all of these kind of things. And I think more needs to be done in that sector, particularly in instances like that. That's one of my concerns. The other question I have, and my colleague actually mentioned this, Honourable Bev, is I've had several situations like this where people with disabilities or families of people with disabilities phone us and say, listen, we've got a real struggle. We've gone to apply for disability grants, okay, which they qualify for. There's no doubt that the children qualified for that. They go with letters from specialists and physicians explaining what these children have and the severity of their disability. And SASA will not accept them, saying until you go to our doctor, and our doctor writes a letter, you're not getting a grant. Now, these people struggle to get those children to doctors in the first place because they are disabled. Some of them have to use public transport. So for them to have to come back to town to stand in a queue at a government hospital or at a government doctor with a disabled child just to get a letter when they already have a letter from a specialist or a specialist physician or an orthopedic surgeon is found extremely, extremely frustrating by these people. And I just want to know, please, is the way we can get around this? We're finding that a very, very big struggle in Limpopo. Thank you, Chair.
But don't think really I'm stopping you, but I wanted to explain that this policy is answering, has come because of those feelings, and definitely all we need is to locate in which pillar that is being addressed. That's why I said, where possible, where we don't need money, we will implement. So thank you so much. Can we go to the next member?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to thank the department for coming with this policy. And we must thank the ANC too, because this is one of our resolutions of Mafeking, the 50th conference, where it was indicated that mainstreaming of disability was put within a resolution. And we have to thank the ANC-led government for all the work done thus far, because much was done when it comes to disability itself. And we know that disabled people are marginalized, And that, like the Honourable Masango said, it's regarded as a curse within our black communities. But I must say, when it comes to people living with albinism, it's very non-racial, because within our family, we normally have one child that's born that has, has albinism, and we regard it within our family as luck. At the moment, the mother has a baby, the one child is normal, the son, but the daughter has albinism. But the only difference when it comes to with an African in particular and with us, the hair is normally long and wavy, but the person is living with albinism, and we regard it as luck. Of course, we always find out when a child is born, is the child albinist, whatever you call it. And when they say it, then we say good luck to our family. The only question I'd like to ask is, when it comes to big business, what monitoring mechanisms will you have in place to see, because here we spoke about 2%, now we're going to 7% of persons that are disabled. But what mechanisms do you have in place to monitor that they have that percentage of 2% of disabled within in business? And then legislation, when can we expect legislation on this policy? Thank you.
Okay. No thanks, Chair. I've gone through the report and through the presentation. I think it will also only be fair and proper that I also express my sincere appreciation and gratitude to the department under the leadership of the minister and the team. In fact, I think one thing that we cannot deny as members of this portfolio committee is that since 1994, there has been tremendous progress by the democratic government in ensuring that we address the marginalized and the vulnerable in terms of people with disabilities. So this policy is just enhancing the good work that has been done over the years. There's still a lot to be done. For me, Chair, my comments on the policy will be that it's a progressive policy. It is developmental in its outlook, and it's a game changer. It's groundbreaking. So I can summarize it in only one word, that it clearly demonstrates in concrete terms that this government does care for people with disabilities, because there will be far-reaching positive implications for people with disabilities. I'm deeply encouraged by the question of access to ECD programs, because universal for the people with children with disabilities, because when you go to the centers, our own experience has been that it has been a challenge for them to be there. So for this policy to be overarching in terms of trying to reach children of special needs, disabilities, it goes a long way of addressing one of the things that says any child who goes through ECD has a better opportunity to perform at the level of grade R and across the grades, because high failure rates in basic education to a greater extent is attributed to the foundation, where there was no solid foundation in terms of ECD. So I'm deeply encouraged about that. My one question will be that in the presentation that Padimo, you have mentioned that there will be a pilot program of capacity in one of the provinces, KZA. What I must is that you have not mentioned, the question is, are there plans to roll out similar programs in the other provinces? If not, then that would be deeply encouraged, because I think all provinces would require that kind of intervention. Then, also in terms of your approach to implementation, I think experience is the best teacher. In your presentation, really, you have highlighted clear, innovative, and creative means of implementation, which I'm deeply appreciative of. It symbolizes a fresh thinking and a fresh approach, because as you clearly say, you are trying to avoid by all means that these very good policies or this policy must not gather dust in the offices. So you've got a very robust approach, which should be deeply encouraging. But lastly, Chair, I think the responsibilities are clearly cut out for all departments that are responsible, so there can be no confusion. Role clarification has been given, especially ourselves as Parliament. Our role has clearly been outlined. So we want to see the department really playing a very strong role in terms of ensuring success. But clearly this is not a DSD responsibility alone, as pointed out in your document. It's all of us responsible. Chair, I think those are the few comments and remarks I wanted to make, but we applaud the team for this great work done for our people in this country. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Okokuqala ndizawubonga presentation yabotata. Okokuqala ndizawuthi kuyathinta kubuhlungu kakhulu kuthi thina abazali bomama. Siyababona bazintlobo ngeentlobo ezahlukene bephila kabuhlungu. And uninzi lwabo alufumani usizo, abazitholi nezi platforms ekuthethwa ngazo abanye babo. Kuyathethwa, bayathenjiswa kakhulu emaphandleni abancedakazi. And ufumanise ukuba bayanyanzwa, bayadeleleka, kanti ke nabo banamalungelo, siyafana. Ndizama ukuthi ke, Chair, ii-departments zonke maziqinisekise ukuba ziyabarecognize aba bantu ngokuphelele. Emaphandleni, ezidolophini, nakwizikolo, nasemisebenzini, nakwii-communities ngokunjalo. Ndiyavuma, Chair, uqalile umsebenzi, kodwa ke mawube luqilima ubonakale kwiindawo zonke, because nabo kaloku banalo ilunga lokuphila njengathi sonke kweli lizwe. Okunye, Chair, nawe minister, okuvele kundivisa ubuhlungu, nakwezi grants bazifumanayo abanye babo bayahlukunyezwa ngokuba ziyathathwa ezi mali ngaba bathi babahoyile or bangamalungelo kubo, abangazisebenzisi ngendlela elungile, such like ukubathengela ukutya nokubanxibisa nokubahlambisa zonke ezo zinto ezo, uthole esokola but ikhona le mbijane bekufanele ubana uyaphila ngayo. So ndizama ukuthi kangaske kwandiswe i-social workers kupha emaphandleni ukwenzela ukuthi ba-check-e, babakhangele aba bantu babahlukumezayo. baba monitorishe yaqonda chesesini ngiyabonga so ndingakanani ndizayithetha ndiyabulela
Lenas, it's a matter of emphasizing for the benefit of Mama Martin that social workers would be in full force in order to monitor whether what belongs to them is taken care of. That's the gist, and the policies are plotted and will bring a lot of change. So the when Minister Netimbalako uzobona ukuthi uphaka bathi thina ngiyabonga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me also join my colleagues in congratulating the team in the sterling work that they have done, especially to make sure that at the end of the day we will be able to, as a country, to move forward and implement the white paper. But then, Chairperson, the first thing that I want to raise, that is always a problem, is the issue of terminology. I'm a parent of a child who is deaf. But then I always find a situation that when we go to different organizations, whether it's within government or in society, the terminology that is being used, you'll pardon me if maybe perhaps I'll use something to describe or to talk about persons who are living with disability is different in almost all the spheres. I have looked at the document and I was encouraged because the document that has been presented to us from the beginning to the end, it talks about the persons with disability. But when you listen even in different platforms, you'll find that I've also listened to the members here. Mm. Others will say people living with disability, people who are disabled. I just want to know from the department whether the terminology that is contained in the document, is it the right terminology that is contained in the constitution? So that I just want all of us to be right when we get it, because most of them, they get frustrated if you don't use the right terminology. You will find this one wanting to be called this way, the other one wanting to be called this way. So I think it's very important for us, even when we go to our different constituencies, we are able, as parliamentarians, to use the right terminology that is accepted within the different conventions that we are as a country, we are assigned to. That's the first question. Chairperson, that I would really want to be assisted so that today when I get out of here, I will be able to know even when I'm addressing platforms, because I always go with my son to different platforms, especially the organizations that are dealing with deaf persons. The second one, Chairperson, is on the issue of the monitoring and the evaluation. It's very clear, and the presenter has said that they have a unit within the department that will be dealing with the monitoring already there in existence. Maybe it's just for them to strengthen it further. But I want to know, in provinces, do they have the same unit as they have in national? Because remember, social development is a concurrent action of both national and provinces. Do they have the same unit in all the different provinces, or perhaps even at the level of the local government? Because SALGA is also a very important stakeholder within the implementation of this policy. The third one, Chairperson, in the issue, I think I would really want to stress what Honorable Madilo has talked about, the issue of the pilot. Like the presenter has said that the pilot is going to be in KZN, but maybe perhaps because it will be easy also for them to take the pilot, maybe concurrently in also other provinces. That's where now the provinces will have to come in and assist social development and national with also funding, because like I said, it's a concurrent function. So if it's being piloted here to make it easy that for everybody to be able to access the information. Can it perhaps be also tried in also other provinces with the assistance of the provinces in different areas? And then, Chairperson, I think the last one is on the issue of, on the issue of the terminology, I wanted to come also with the Department of Education. Remember, the Department of Education, when they in their, I think it's white paper 6 called, the inclusive education.
Yes.
We talk about learners with special needs. Now it is different when you get to the education sector, because we talk about the learners with a special need. So also that, I wanted to also know what with that terminology, whether with the education, they will also have to use the universal terminology that is being used and understood, because you start from the little ones for them to understand this is the correct way of dealing with the issue. All in all, Chairperson, I'm really very encouraged. I'm very encouraged with the document, with the white paper. It will really assist, like I said, because I know, I think that if Padima and the DDG will agree with me, we've got a serious problem when it comes to school, especially the deaf schools.
Mm.
Most of our children there, they can't go as far as grade 12 because of the issues that are. If you are, they are fortunate, they will go to grade 12. Because either there are no resources that are assisting them, there are no, a lot of things that are there. Actually, some of the schools are even neglecting it. I know in Free State, one of the good schools is a school that is in Kwakwa Tibulua that has got deaf learners who are able to go through to grade 12. But for Bartamia, it's only now after parents stood up to say, why can't our children be able to go up until the level of grade 12, which is really, it's a serious problem, because a lot of them, they even get to a stage when they get to grade 12, they struggle with the language. Remember, sign language is a language on its own. When they have to communicate with us, whether they are writing or whatever, they have to write down with English, which then become a problem, because they are being taught by teachers who do not understand the language, their language. Remember, when we used to say as teachers, a child would learn by sound. They don't have a sound. Once you put a sound to children, they will understand. But the problem, the plight that they are having, really, it's a serious one. Like Honorable Bembry has said, that if you are rich, then you will. Or let me not say if you are rich, if your parents are able to afford some of these things, then a person with a disability will be able to go further in life. But other than that, I'm really encouraged with the white paper. The last thing, Chairperson, will they be available? Will the department be available when we do our constituency work, when we ask them to come? Because I feel like now we should start marketing it in our constituencies. Already when we go for a constituency work, we need to go with the white paper, because the English that is there is very simple. Everybody can understand it. There are already plans for some. I already have a plan now that in December when I go for the constituency, I should begin talking to my constituents about the white paper. But will they avail themselves when we request them in a constituency to come and make the presentation? Because I might not present it the way they are presenting it. Thank you.
When you take a flow, the delegation from the department as led by the minister, how will you be able to assist deal with competition of the forums that are there? Because you find a situation where there's a forum for the deaf and that of the blind and so on. There seems to be a little bit of a tension in those forums, as if maybe we concentrate more on a particular type of disability. I think we need also, as part of implementation,
to promote that integration of existing forums. So the thank you, Honourable Members, or with your input, Honourable Dadis didn't say anything. So can we give the minister, I mean the delegation from the department?
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honourable Members of Parliament, we've been trying to look for a school. It's not a school, it's an institution in the Northern Cape, Kimberley. I think it's one of the best institutions in the country for severely disabled children. Stimulation. It was the first time I saw that you use a horse for stimulation, but also water to strengthen the limbs, and many other programs that are there. And you also have programs for children that are mentally challenged. Because most of the time, there is a category that we are not able to include in our programs. And I think we also need to improve our understanding. Deaf people, it's a struggle. When you go to hospital with a deaf child, people have to fight with the officials at a hospital because they would say, no, that's not visible, and all those things. We have received such complaints. Yes, much as we agree to the issue of integration, we are following what a government is saying. People with disabilities are not homogeneous. Immediately after the launch of the policy, there was an outcry for a meeting with the president. There are those that think issues of people with disabilities should be located in the office of the president. There are those that feel they should be located in the department. And we know that our responsibility is implementation and policy development. The major part that we think should maybe go to the presidency is the issue of ensuring that all other departments implement a disability policy. Why? Because as a department, we cannot call a department and say to them, account, are you accessible, and how many people are in your department. All those areas are the areas that we think are very important. But also we'd like the committee to invite other departments and find out what they are doing in as far as disability is concerned. And portfolio committees are allowed to do that. We are also sometimes called to go and account by other portfolio committees. And then issues of dyslexia. Kids that are dyslexic are treated as if they are not smart, and therefore that needs a committed teacher
to identify that a child has a challenge. Right now, the DM is on the roadshow to all the provinces to check a progress in terms of implementation, understanding, and a presentation of the policy. And we have said that we are going to be involved or have dialogues throughout the country with the stakeholders, but also parents of children with disabilities. And it's true that in the rural areas, you will find children with disabilities hidden right there in all. Yeah, when we were in Bula through Mikonzo, women stood up to say, look, there are many children with disabilities here, and they are locked in houses. They can't get out of their houses, and you need to have a parent that is conscious of what is supposed to happen if you have a disabled child. The question that I have always asked myself is, what happens when you leave hospital after giving birth to a child with a disability or with a disability? Because in hospital we do have social workers, but thereafter what happens? And those are the areas that we have to strengthen. And I know that is where we will be fighting very hard, because you, at some stage, are going to ask for practical implementation. You would want to see implementation. And we need to try and have strong monitoring. Yes, we do have monitoring in provinces. But what we have said to Mr. Ebuchele Chaban, that please go to provinces. Don't only receive reports, because sometimes reports are nicer or are full of the information that is not there. So you need to go and concretize that information, but also you need to go and talk to NGOs and community-based organizations that work with people with disabilities. Again, the issue of social workers. I hope we will be to improve Mamsod go monitoring, because right now we are busy with the treasury looking into the absorption of the social workers that have not been absorbed for quite some time. And we think that is going to make a difference in the work we are doing. Because among other social work, umsebenzi wakho omkhulu is on the ground. Even checking how is the grant used, child support grant, where people with disabilities stay, and also abanye fane bahambe ifizyo. Bayaya in physiotherapy. Kodwa ngiyafuna futhi ukusho ukuthi abantu abasebenzisa or abanama programs uma ngabe kade involved ku car accident is the road accident fund. It has been doing that, and I think we need to strengthen our relationship with them.
because it remains their responsibility to ensure that someone was involved in an accident is rehabilitated properly up until they can be able to do things for themselves. Well, we are not yet at the level of training our people to be independent because of our country. We are still looking at a broader issues. We are not like Japan, where they focus in each and every person up until they are able to do things on their own. So we are a country that is rich and poor, and services that are supposed to be accessed by our people. Some of them are expensive, and we are not saying that we are not going to try. We have to try, and sometimes we find ourselves doing things that are not supposed to be done by us. Children with albinism, the trim, the head, the glasses, it's not our responsibility, but we do provide because we understand the need. We've lost quite a number of children or young people with albinism because of the lack of access just to the cream, because it helps to prevent cancer, skin cancer. The issue of the doctors, I think for now what we need to do is to, when a person comes with a doctor's certificate, if I think there are procedures that we are following, and we have doctors in all the provinces, and what we need to do is to ask our doctors to go and assess a person and then start with the process. But also we can say, once you receive the first doctor's report, you put a person in the system so that you start processing the documents and then make a follow-up, because already there is something that is evident. And sometimes I think we become too rigid in the way we do our work. In some of the areas, home-based care, we have a home-based carers as the department, and those are the people that are supposed to be intervening in families where you have people that are severely disabled and stay on their own, because you will find people that stay on their own. And it is true that in some of the areas, wheelchair cannot work. And I think we need to meet with the Department of Human Settlement and provide them with a register of people with disabilities, so that if they build houses, they know that there is such a number of people with disabilities in an area, because we can't instruct them to make all houses accessible. But you can take our chances and ask them to do so,
But what is basic is to ensure that houses of people with disabilities are accessible. Again, the issue of schools. This issue has been raised with us continuously. There is one school where I've seen mainstreaming and integration, which is in Mpumalanga, where all kids in the school understand a sign language because there is a class of kids that use a sign language. Again, I think Thabani will give a report on a tracking and a referral system. But also, I think it's important for us to know that we report under outcome 13. But number two, we are finished with the white paper on welfare, the review. And now we are busy with the act. So it's either we come up with a disability, people with a disability, persons with disabilities. In the UN, they say persons with disabilities. So now we say people with disabilities. We have one legislation, or be part of what the Social Development Act is going to come up with. But one other advantage of the Social Development Act is that it's going to ensure that our work from national, province, local government is linked, and the structures talk to each other. Because well, I agree we work with provinces, but I think we all know here that when you have a MINMEC, provinces tell you squarely that no, we are going back to consult in the province. And the constitution also is clear that the bus stops with a national. And what we have seen is that the departments that have, like the Department of Health, they have an act, Department of Education, they have a legislation, are much better than us. And therefore, having a legislation is going on social development is going to improve our work and the relationship with provinces, and we're going to be able to do our work vertically and horizontally without problems. But we want to thank members of the committee for accepting our policy, and I'm just disappointed that we could not bring copies for all members. It's the
there's another additional question from the content advisor about cerebral palsy. that where do they really go now in terms of accessing education, because of their level of ability, they sometimes are older than those who are with them in the class. Thank you.
I think they are going to respond. But, you know, with a cerebral palsy, if you have a good people that look after you, who understand that some do finish a school and go to work. And these are also the things that we have to look into. Like a kid that are under foster care, some of them complete grade 12 at the age of 20 because they move from one family to another, change places, and therefore we need to try and ensure that is covered so that it does not create problems for us. And Nina, I thought you bring the other copy. Yeah, Bray. Yes, let's bring copies, a full pack for members of parliament, as well as the Bray copy for all members of parliament that serve in the portfolio committee, because a Bray is a bit expensive. And then slowly we're going to try and ensure that all schools have this, as well as NGOs and NPOs that work with people with disabilities, access Braille copies. Thank you very much.
Before you start, can I request that I request Honorable Soledi to stand for me. There is something urgent I need to attend out with this whip. I don't know whether I'm violating any procedure so far, because we have already collated and I've been chairing the meeting, and I will come back once that matter has been sorted out. So I also know that there's a learned lady next to me who can actually check when I there's a flaw. So she has not, she's allowing me to go. Okay, can I request Honorable Soledi to do so? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister, for the response. And now, if I may sort of address, I'm not ignoring the Minister, but I want to particularly address the delegation as to where we can access information with who are the home-based carers, who, when we find these very, very unfortunate situations in these constituencies, some of which are really horrific, who do we take these matters to? Because really there are issues out there that need dealing with very, very urgently, and that would help us very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, maybe let's speak to the issue of terminology. As Minister has alluded, that because we are embracing the domestication of the UN Convention, so we therefore use the language of UN. And they are saying persons with disabilities because they are saying that disabled people are persons first before anything. So that's what they are driving. But in a country like South Africa, disabled people are saying they are disabled people. And they are saying that because they are saying unless we keep this conscious in ourselves that the disability is in the environment. So the environment is disabling ourselves. That's why we are calling ourselves disabled people, because it's the environment. So we are conscious that our work has to make sure that we remove the barriers in the environment so that we're all like all other people, or we're able to participate like all other people. Now, we're using those terminologies correctly because we're saying that this is what UN is saying. So that when you say persons with disabilities, you are able to say to a person, why are you saying that? When you say disabled people in terms of disability politics in South Africa, you're able to explain why. However, we're saying that there are certain terminologies that are not acceptable. Disabled people are not living with anything. So we can't say people who are living with disabilities. We are not challenged by anything, so we can't say that. So it's important for us to begin. I'm sure Mr. Padime would be able to make sure that we document some of these things so that we share the terminology issue with the members of the portfolio committee. I think in the policy or in the implementation metrics, there is a glossary of terms that's in the policy and the definitions that explains that, because that's also another issue that Minister was talking about, that it has been difficult for us, and it's an area that is highly debated by disabled people, that why do you want us to have a definition when you don't have a definition for men and you don't have a definition for women? You know, why are you putting a definition on us? So within government, because it's about resources and what you can provide to people, then government would, in a definition, would say, this is what is wrong with this person, and therefore the implication is that we need to provide this. That is why I think Member Wilson was saying that, I don't know whether it was you, Member Wilson, that people are refused because they are told that you are not disabled, so you don't qualify for a disability grant. So it's not a definition that is restoring the person's dignity, because that's the first thing that we need to address, that disabled people's dignity must be restored. Hence this policy that is directing us in terms of how we need to behave in addressing that. There was a question around how do we deal with whether we can replicate the pilot that we're doing in KZN. We want to make sure that, because provinces want to be given a template and they wanted to be guided properly, so we wanted to use the pilot in KZN that we're doing, the results thereof, so that we're able to present it to the provinces, so that at least we're able to help them to implement, because we would have the results thereof. The other issue that we were asked by Honorable Malgas was the issue around what's the role of big business. As Minister has said, this is the role of the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor forces companies to have to develop equity plans, employment equity plans, so that they are committing themselves in terms of what they are supposed to do. So, as Minister was saying, that sometimes we have to do something that is not our mandate, because we understand, because we're dealing with social issues, everything is dropped on us, and we can't say, oh, it's not our responsibility. But we then persuade those departments to make sure that they deal with that. Ben will also speak about issues around legislation. can we... I think Ben, those are the ones that... let me talk. There was an issue around rehab that people, when they get rehabilitation in an institution, when they go out, there is nothing for them. There's an example in Mpumalanga where they run the community-based rehabilitation program, where community-based rehabilitation workers are in the field, like development workers, and they are able to visit people and make sure that there's peer groups that are set up. There was an issue also around the independent living as a concept, where we're saying that disabled people need to be assisted. In Gauteng, they are working with JICA, as Minsa was saying earlier on. We're looking at some of those examples. And they are running a personal assistant program where disabled people come together as a peer group, and they look at what is it that they need. And those people that are supposed to provide the support to disabled people are therefore trained, and they are paid, I think it's about 79 rands an hour, and we are running a pilot thereof. So we're hoping that we'll be able to develop an independent living program with Gauteng, so that this can be replicated with other provinces. We also, for mentally disabled or psychosocial disabilities, there's a project that DM has been supporting in Gauteng. It's called Forest Town, where children with intellectual disabilities or youth with intellectual disabilities are working in a restaurant, and they are able to provide the necessary services that is needed, and also working on repairing computers. So those are some of the things. But Honorable Wilson spoke about something that is happening in Tzaneen, and I think that's a Mopane district. Minister is driving us. I'm leading the Mikonzo program in Limpopo, and I'm wanting Honorable Williams, so that we can have the details of these people, then we can, because there's a team that work in the district, that we can make sure that we can visit them and find out what is it that, because we're working per district and per municipality, so that we can deal with. Benny, I think you can answer this. Okay. I'll be very brief, Honourable Members and Honourable Minister.
Sorry, Ben.
Yes.
Would you explain how a
thanks, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Minister. I want to explain the fact that our basic legislation starts from Section 28 of the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, as amended, number 52 of 2002. And that talks to special measures in terms of persons with disabilities. Also, Section 10 of the same Act talks to that. And that's the process that we are following currently, because we feel that if you review the sections of the Equality Act and you add certain regulations, it will be something that is starting to kickstart the process of the white paper and moving on in terms of equality courts and how the case law dictates or directs government to be implementing certain issues. Secondly, the aspect is to domesticate. Now, I must say this, honorable members, 2,500 pieces of legislation that we audited last year, we only discovered that 27 only comply. 27. And it's a 400-page document that says this is the gap analysis. And we've had dialogues with our colleagues from the Department of Justice to get legal opinion on that. But we are also working together with our group, our colleagues in the Department of Social Development in different areas, such as social assistance and the Children's Act amendments and so on. So that's how we move. And obviously the ultimate issue is to be able to go into the process of the Social Development Act, so that we then have a cross-cutting legislation, as I've explained it, out of the three options. All three options, you take all of them, but you put them in terms of the socioeconomic impact assessment process and say which one is more acceptable and more you know, doable. With regard to questions around the children with cerebral palsy, we've looked at Section 12 and Section 13 of the South African Schools Act and Section 42 thereof to say, in terms of children who experience learning barriers to learning, that's how we call them, they experience learning barriers. Learners who experience learning barriers. How do we put them into the system through what we call the screening, identification, assessment, and support policy? And that has seemed to be one of the biggest way out, actually, to really get these children to work. They fall under pillar number two, honorable member, in terms of the policy itself, people experiencing compounded marginalization. So that's basically under pillar number two of the policy. So I'll hand over to DDG to just speak to the issue that the Minister raised now.
Thanks, Minister. I wanted to ask to clarify the KZN matter. It's just for the chairperson and other members to note that in preparation for the Deputy President's visit last year for the World AIDS Day on 1st of December, DSD's responsibility was for it to then do the community profiling, as it always does during part of their work. And as we were doing the profiling, there was then an identification of a school where for children with disabilities that were being put there as if they are boarding in that particular space. And that when we visited that school, we discovered that it had many, many challenges, from the admin, from the fact that there were no programs for these particular children and so forth. So it then was the deputy minister that was asked to then accompany the deputy president in terms of his visit. So there's been lots of interventions that you have done as a department, hence the initiation of that particular program, in which is part of what the DDG, Mr. Tony, presented. It was just on that note, as part of the visit of the deputy president during the World Health Day, which was held at Ezinoleni, which is the south of KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. There seem to be a follow-up on your response by Honourable Madi. Honourable members, let them finish the first round of questions. After they've exhausted them, we can ask the next question. But also be mindful of time. Our time, apparently, we are allocated up until 12:30 because we still have to adopt the B triple R report. Honourable members, thank you. Honourable Madi.
No, thanks. I think we must place it on record. That's additional information. That was never a question that we posed for the record, so that there must be no misconception. Always when the department presents throughout, you will say Eastern Cape, Western Cape, whatever. We always ask a question, is there a plan to roll out to other provinces? So the question is never why a particular province, because that's operational. We don't get into that. So I thought
what you are, for the record, you must place it on record. This is just additional information that you are giving us, but that was not a question. And Mr. Buthelezi, you know that. You always present the departmental operational plans and all the progress. We always ask this type of question. So even if it was another province, we always ask, is there a plan for other provinces? Simple problem. So I thought it is important that we clarify and set the matter for record, but we accept the additional information, but we didn't need that.
Okay, thank you, Honorable
Mabila.
Can you proceed?
I think, Chair, there's only one question that we did not answer. It was about a person not qualifying for a job. I think Honorable Abrams was saying that the person's around 42 years. And I find it difficult because there's nothing that stops the person from acquiring securing a job because of the fact that there might be other things that we might not understand. We would be willing to follow up, Honorable Member, in terms of checking what is the real problem. Because one of the things that we had addressed, when SITAs would make learnership program available, and they would say they are the limit of the ages is 35. And this is what disabled people are complaining about. And that's what we had engaged the SITAs to correct that. So I'm not sure whether that's that or this is, we're talking about open labor market here.
Thank you so much. I think the question that was asked on the cerebral policy, I don't want, you know, this morning I was listening to Mr. Wendy and that, which are the words that are so difficult to pronounce when people are drunk. So I know some of these really, I was laughing myself because they were saying there are words that when people are drunk, they would not even want to pronounce them. Like representation, they were calling them interrelationship. There are a lot of terms, so I don't want to get into that situation. I think what she wanted, when we were doing the oversight work, we came across a situation whereby a very old person, a 52-year person, having the that type of a disability, they wanted to know where can they place the person because the person is very old and cannot be placed within the formal setting of an education. Like I know in Bloemfontein we have special schools that are dedicated to that type of a disability. So the question is, does social development have some facilities that they know perhaps where people can be placed? Like, and I know there is also an AP something in Bloemfontein, which is an organization that deals with a lot of them. They are placed in that organization. Even those who are looking for employment, they assist them. So in different provinces, do they have the same setup? Thank you.
Thank you very much. In many instances, they are placed in protective workshops for the days, like, for instance, during the day. Remember that the encouragement of the policy, it talks to disability and persons living in the families with persons with disabilities. So what the direction of the policy is that the person must associate with the family as close as possible. So part of it is that the protective workshops take that into consideration. APD is the one that you're talking about, Mama. Honorable Mama is in Bloemfontein, yes. They are also doing that kind of a job. There's also some of the sections of the residential facilities that can actually be able to assist in terms of that. But mostly it would be in your protective workshops and organizations like APD and National Association of Cerebral Palsy, which has got that kind of facility. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Wilson, Honorable Devlin, Honorable members, are you all covered? Because I'm closing after those honorable members. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify. I think the Minister partially covered it, about people with disability, with family or children who are disabled to go to SASA to claim a disability grant. They are going with letters from doctors or neurosurgeons or specialists who've been attending their children, saying this child is disabled, this child has got cerebral palsy, or it's a mongoloid child, or whatever it is. And SASA is turning them away on the grounds that they didn't visit the SASA doctor. They're not being turned away because they're not classified as being disabled. They're being turned away because the letter and recommendation from the doctor is not a SASA doctor. But there are letters from specialists and surgeons who are, you know, accredited specialists and surgeons. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Beverly.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Mine is just a follow-up on the grant in aid, where a person cannot take care of himself, and the person would apply for that grant in aid. Very seldom it's just approved. I just want to know what's the reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, Honourable Members? Honourable Mabilo, Honourable Sondi, Honourable... You are all covered. Thank you. You can proceed with the answers.
Person, I think there's something we need to go and check this thoroughly, because it's only doctors that give direction in terms of people with disabilities, and therefore turning them away is a challenge. So we need to check what is actually going on. Let's make that our responsibility. It's
Honourable Wilson. Honourable Wilson, I'm still sharing. Can the minister finish what he's saying, and then we'll have your follow-up.
And Chairperson, it's not that only. Even the review of the grant by someone who is severely disabled. I always relate a story of a family we visited in Msing. Later, I felt very foolish. We visited the family. I think they got a support from the neighborhood, but and also from their families. Both parents and the kids. Now we had come to ask them to go and review the grant, and then it was nice. They received us nicely. We spoke, and then you know, in our culture, African culture, when someone visits you, you accompany them on your way out. And then this man says, we're saying our goodbyes. He says, I am not going there. The one who closed my grant is going to bring back my grant and bring my money back to me and open my grant. And that was, it made sense, because this person is not going to change. He has a mental disability. So that's not going to change. It has been there for quite some time. And I think these are the things that this should give us an opportunity to change those things, because sometimes we block people that are the correct recipients of the grant, and put a lot of regulations that are an impediment. And I don't know with the grant in aid, but we've been mobilizing communities
to apply for the granting aid, and it's one of the grants that are going up. Even our slides are showing that there are more people that are now applying for the grant in aid. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I think the Minister's basically covered. This is a regulation that we must look at, because specialised doctors have written letters. Recognised registered surgeons have written letters, and being turned away on the grounds that they haven't gone to a SASA doctor is unfair, and it also creates an indication that we're trying to make money for SASA doctors. And that's going to be an issue in the future. But thank you, Minister. I appreciate your response. And I would just like to know where we can refer, well, the gentleman, the presenter can give me his details so I can refer this case to him. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I also wanted to add, Honorable Wilson, to say maybe perhaps where there are incidents, we should also bring them forward. Because remember, even the specialized doctors themselves, they are also syndicates. They also work with these people. Some of them, they work even with us. But that's why what I'm trying to say is, if there are those incidents that are happening within our constituencies, let's bring them forward. Normally in my constituency, I would take a family to SASA. If there is something that is a problem, then we deal with the matter. I will make them explain to the family what might be the cause of them saying, go to this doctor and not go to that doctor. But at the end of the day, you have an understanding of a system whereby everybody is able to get in and sometimes do things that are not correct. Also on the issue of the granting aid, Minister is correct. It's really what we have realized, a lot of people did not know that there is that grant, a granting aid. Actually, even ourselves, when we're supposed to go out and talk to the people, we have not been doing that. I think it's one area that we also need to strengthen up as parliamentarians, office bearers, even including councillors, to have meetings them with our own councillors in our own localities where we have constituencies. We explain to them about all the grants. You will be surprised that they do not even know that there are those grants that they need to access. Immediately they know about them, they are able to go and get the assistance in the offices of SASA that are close by them. Honourable members, in the absence of anything that you would want to ask to the department, I'll then give over to the minister to close to summarise, and then we continue with our meeting.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think we are going to sit and come up with our program of action and phase it, but also we think priorities are legislation as well as dialogues and the workshop. And I would like also to be part of the workshop so that we understand where members of parliament are standing, so that we also understand areas that we have to quickly look into, even because some of the things do not need legislation. They just need us to institutionalize them and ensure that everyone follows the book. But we are ready to do the work, and unfortunately the people that are responsible for the branch are efficient. I'm just disappointed that they did not bring women, because there are also very good women there who are actually doing a very good work. But we're going to try and fast-track the processes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to the department for the presentation of the white paper. Really, like we said, as a portfolio committee, we can see that we are moving to somewhere, especially with this piece of a document that is so much important. Thank you very much. We are looking forward to seeing you in our community, being able to send it out, because once you get to those community, you talk to them, you send the document, then everything will be fine. Because our people, what they are looking for is for them to be given services, is for them to be equipped with knowledge. Thank you so much. Honourable members, can we then get to the next session? Just 5 minutes to stretch, and then we continue, because remember last week we already went through it. Honourable members, can we go to page 40? If you remember that there was a delay with this report from the Department of Social Development, so the report is here, it's been included. Why I'm saying we must go to page 40, to remember the other pages were already dealt with them last week, so I wouldn't want us to go back to the whole document. Can we then move from page 40? If there is anything that you think is not appropriately placed there, or it's not supposed to be there, can we then look at that? We are on page 40. And then also our recommendations are starting from page 46. Let's deal from page 40 to 45, and then we get to the recommendations. Is there anything, honorable members, on page 40? Honorable Masango? Be on record, honourable member.
I see that we said throughout the recommendations, we would say that the minister must or something. And
I'm not sure.
Yes, that is page 40.
Okay, finish, honourable member.
No. These are recommendations on page 40.
On page 40?
Yes.
We can't change.
Okay.
We can't change, but it's what we needed. It's already adopted on page 40 to page 45. So what I was looking for is for you, have you looked through on it?
Okay.
On from page 40, did you go through the page, or you want us to go line by line?
No.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. Let's go to page 46 there, the current one. On page 46, is there anything, honorable Dev?
Thanks, honorable Chair. Just the bullet 4, B-triple-R and not B-double-R, thank you.
B-triple-4. It's bullet four.
Bullet three.
Okay. The spelling there, you missed an R. The triple R. Can we, are we still, we are still on page 46. Can we move to page 47? Do you see the mast, Honorable?
Yes.
The mast is there. Oh, there are still shoots. Where is the shoot? Can we look for the shoot? The last bullet, the minister must on page 46. The National Department should improve its monitoring and evaluation and reporting by the provincial departments on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm saying we those can stay shoot.
Yes.
Those can stay shoot.
Yes.
Okay.
And then let's move to page 47, Honorable Members. Are they the representation of what we discussed last week, Honorable Members, the changes that were omitted, the inclusion that needed to be included there, are they all the covered?
Yes,
Honorable Mabilo.
Thanks, Honorable Acting Chair. I think that was covered appropriately. Yes.
Can we, okay, Vicky, let me get to the content advisor before we can move.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to get advice from the committee on page, I'm using an electronic clinic.
Page 47.
Page 46. Bullet number four, where we had recommended that the minister must implement the recommendations on the dormant account of funds. My advice is sought because if you look at the reports back from the department on last year's present recommendations, while it addresses the implementation of this recommendation, I'm just going to quickly go to that page numbers.
But remember, even if it addresses that, the problem is they have not implemented it. They have, it was there last year, we talked about it, but there was no implementation on it. Again, it was picked up for this financial year. So in other words, we still have to recommend on it, because it's a matter that has been picked up within the financial year.
Okay.
That was under question.
Oh, okay, but it's on page 40, members. Okay. Page 40.
It's on page 40 where it says, I think it's paragraph, bullet one, the last paragraph. It starts the whole thing. It starts with the whole thing. I don't know whether you want me to read everything. The department, the committee reiterates its recommendation it has made in the last two financial years that the minister should facilitate a process to ensure that the five dormant funds of the department are deactivated or the legislation to close them is drafted and submitted to the parliament in the next financial year. The department amended the Fundraising Act of 1978 and the fundraising amendment bill was submitted to cabinet to obtain approval to publish it for comments. The amendment bill provides for the discontinuation of certain funds and for the dissolution of any board responsible for these funds to establish the Disaster Relief and National Social Development Fund with one board with a view to streamline issues of governance and strengthening efficient services to the poor communities. It also makes provision for a transfer of any amounts remaining in the discontinued fund to the Disaster Relief and National Social Development Fund to empower the minister to make regulations in respect of the financial year of the fund and to provide for matters connected herewith. It also enables the department to deal with the issues of short-term relief and sustainable development. It will align the Fundraising Act with the Disaster Management Act No. 57 of 2002 and the Social Assistance Act No. 13 of 2004. It will further reduce costly administrative services required by various boards. Because the Fundraising Act was enacted in 1978, it is not aligned to the Public Finance Management Act, in particular on issues of accountability and governance. Therefore, the National Treasury and the Office of the Auditor General are in support of the consolidation of the fund into one fund to ease cumbersome administration and secretariat services. Are we all? This is the response from last year, which, not, let me say the year, 2014-2015 response on the matter. Now, let's come to 2015-2016. It also appears in the recommendation for that the minister must ensure that the minister must ensure that between 2016-2017 and 2018-2017 financial years, the recommendation made by the SWAL committee and the AG regarding the four domain funds are implemented so that their agencies no longer become an audit query. Then I think that's a very good recommendation following up from that one. Because it's straightforward, there's a timeline on the issue that it needs to be implemented. That one was lacking a timeline, but this one now has got a timeline answering what they've said to the portfolio committee.
Chair, the two areas are really working well, because the other is explanatory to say this was what was supposed to happen. This one, the last one that you're talking about, is saying implement it, because it has not. Thank you.
Thank you. Are we all in agreement, honourable members? Yes.
Thank you very much. I just read the recommendations. The wording of must instead of should. I think we advise that we are recommending to the House, and the House will adopt the report. I understand that we need to be instructive, but they say, I'll further consult. In most cases, when we write recommendations, we use should, because we have a responsibility to make a follow-up if that doesn't happen. Because as the committee, we are recommending to the House, and then the House will debate and then adopt, and it becomes a resolution. And the Speaker to Parliament will communicate to the department on our behalf. So I just need to get more clarity in terms of must, because I've never used must, whether should, because when it's must, it's a matter of do it, whether you can or not. But should give that leeway, we can make a follow-up. So I think that's the reason that we advise not to use must, as if it's a matter of doing it. So I think technically there was that problem. In most of the reports in the committee section, we advise that we must use should. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much. I think we really debated on that matter extensively, because it's a matter of them doing it, because they are attached with the mandate of doing that, which is service delivered. But then the contact advisor has also informed that she consulted, and they said must is correct. Even if must becomes a terminology that is being used. Even in other committees, they use must, because we are an extension of a house. We are a mini house in other ways. Whatever that we say here, the house, we do work for the house. The house has to adopt what we agreed about as a portfolio committee. Yes.
I know I was part of that debate, but I don't want us to throw out the baby with the bathwater. What do I mean by that? I mean the proposal by the secretary to further consult. I think let's accommodate that so that we are not becoming, hard and fast. So based on that,
let further, I don't think it will do any harm for further engagement, not engagement, further advice on that, so that we don't become absolutist. In my way, I don't want us to argue around semantics, but this element, we have not looked into it by the time we conclude it. So I think let's give that that opportunity. Thanks.
Honorable Salo.
Unfortunately, I've just come out of a meeting that was talking about these matters before we finish, saying that where we're supposed to instruct, we must. Because it is the observation that we were given was our little bit weak in terms of understanding the position of the chairs, as well as that of a portfolio committee, as opposed to the other pillars. So I think we were given a summary of the observations that were seen in our report. So I would urge that we rather instruct, but if we were instructing on a wrong matter, it will have to, during debate, it will come the other way, and we can correct it. If our approach in the matter now, as we write the report, so the report must be as instructive as much as possible. If we have agreed as a committee that this work must be done, it must be done. So I think we can take it either on board, but I think this debate of you, I was not present, but I think this debate on the content of instructing has been seen as a weak, because we were told not all committees would be informed what type of a report, but the information was that strictly. That's why I left the whip, so that we don't miss other instructions. So can I plead that we go for instruction, instruction type of approach. Thank you.
No, I think, Shepherdson, we vanilla. I didn't really want us honorable members to open it. As much as Shepherdson was not there last week in that debate, but the debate was based on exactly that. I'm happy that you are from a meeting that has emphasized the importance of that. And I would also want the officials to really understand why, where are honorable members coming from? Because of matters that are not always overlapping to another year, overlapping. We need to get to a stage whereby things are no longer recurring for so many financial years. As if we are toothless members of parliament, why I necessarily want to say we can't be apologetic when we have to do our work. Thank you very much. Let me give back to the chairperson. Thank you for your borrowing.
If really I wouldn't want this meeting to continue. If we can finish, then I'll do my task of signing, because I don't want to be changing seat now. I think we are almost through, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members, can we move to the very important part of the report? Can we then adopt the report? Honorable Beverly.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move the report be adopted. With the
any second, honourable member, honourable Wilson.
Chair, thank you. We do believe that the report is good. However, we can't make any decision on the report until such time as we present it to caucus standing. Our party standing, official stand on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, honourable
Mayor. I formally second the adoption of the report as a reflection of the Portfolio Committee of Social Development. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Can I just say thank you so much for all the work since we started. I think the interrogation of issues there, and when we were seated there in that assessment, I felt very comfortable, because we did everything. There's no gray areas that we didn't deal with. However,
mandates of political parties are mandates and they don't belong really here. They belong to their stance on national issues. For us here, we have been disciplined, we have been tolerating each other, and I think members work a lot because in every instance, what you portrayed was people who know what they're talking about, who know their country, who know what challenges are there. And for that, I thank you so much for every effort. And then the report has been adopted. We do the necessary work. Thank you very much. May we then declare the meeting as the acting chair.